Welcome back to The Deep Dive, where we take complex strategies and, well, we boil them down into clear, actionable knowledge for you, the learner.
Mm.
Today, we are strapping on our cleats and grabbing the whistle because we are diving deep into a fundamental shift in family life.
Yeah, we're moving from parenting as, you know, reactive policing to parenting as proactive strategic coaching.
Exactly.
We've sourced some incredibly rich material today, and it all focuses on a single powerful philosophy.
What's the core idea?
It's a design strategy. It's intended to pull parents and young people out of those reactive arguments and into a shared mission.
A shared mission. I like that.
The core truth we're really dissecting is that parents and young people must be on the same team.
Not opponents.
Exactly. Dedicated to the same outcome, not perpetually engaged as adversaries.
That framework, same team. That's really the mission here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We want to equip you with the practical strategies to coach your children toward, well, genuine maturity.
And functional independence, yeah.
We're moving past the idea that parenting is just about enforcing household rules.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we're looking at those daily friction points. You know, the forgotten dishes, the late homework, the messy room.
All of
them. As crucial training grounds for developing essential lifelong character traits.
And what's fascinating here is how the strategy links those daily tasks directly to what the sources call Point B qualities.
Okay, what are Point B qualities?
So these are the aspirational character traits like diligence, integrity, or patience that we are deliberately working toward. It's not just about the absence of bad behavior.
Got it. It's proactive.
It's proactive. And this deep dive will unpack how to adopt that coaching attitude, why deliberate real-world practice is so vital for installing those new traits,
sure.
And how combining radical firmness with deep compassion is really the key to unlocking change.
Let's unpack this core difference right away, because it feels like the foundation of the whole strategy.
It is.
The distinction between a coach and a policeman,
right?
Or as some sources phrase it, an umpire. If you're a parent right now, this is a moment of, I think, necessary self-reflection. Which role do you naturally fall into?
And that distinction is just vital. It shapes the entire relationship dynamic. The sources describe the policeman attitude as inherently adversarial.
That's all.
While this parent establishes rigid rules, and then they just stand back.
And wait.
And wait for the child to step out of bounds so they can blow the whistle, issue the ticket, and, you know, deliver the consequence.
Which creates a relationship centered entirely on boundary maintenance.
And rule enforcement, yeah.
And when a relationship is defined like that, the child's motivation becomes purely external, right? It's just about avoiding punishment.
Not internal growth. Exactly. Okay. It makes the parent the barrier.
The obstacle.
Precisely. The coaching attitude, on the other hand, is fundamentally supportive. It's preemptive.
You're getting ahead of the problem.
You are. It means communicating, hey, we're on the same team, and I see where you need to improve. You're coming alongside the child, working with them toward that positive outcome.
Toward that Point B quality.
Not just waiting for them to mess up the rules so you can enforce a penalty.
There's a great anecdote from the sources that just perfectly illustrates this perception gap.
Oh, yeah. The one with the teenager?
Yes. He openly admitted it was easier to listen to his basketball coach than his parents. And when they asked him why...
The answer is so simple.
He said, "The coach wants me to win."
And the perception he had of his parents was so different. He thought his parents just want me to make my bed and clean up my room.
It's a huge disconnect. The parents, I'm sure, intended to teach responsibility.
Of course.
But the child only perceived them as these bureaucratic obstacles demanding compliance.
And the coaching model tries to overcome that barrier, to help the young person see that their parents' instructions, even about cleaning the room, are actually strategic training steps.
To help them win at life.
Exactly.
So, coaching relies heavily on the power of relationship to bring about change.
Which is the polar opposite of the policeman role, which relies on the power of authority. And it does. The coaching flows naturally when a few other things are already in place.
Like what?
You have to clearly identify that specific positive Point B quality the child needs to develop. You have to provide vision about why that quality, say, diligence, is valuable for their future.
And then?
And then you actually have to teach them the step-by-step skills of how to get there. Coaching is the supportive attitude that wraps around that whole teaching process.
That sets the stage beautifully. Okay, so once we adopt that core coaching attitude, we need the right tactics for when things inevitably go wrong.
They always do.
Let's talk about that first critical strategy the sources highlight.
Yeah.
How we handle our own emotions as parents, specifically anger.
This is where the source material gets intensely practical. It acknowledges that enforcing rules or dealing with defiance often reveals a parent's own weakness.
Frustration, anger.
Yep. And when a parent realizes they need to address their own reactive response, the suggestion isn't to just suppress the anger.
What is it then?
It's to actively replace it with compassion while maintaining absolute firmness.
That is a highly nuanced concept. I can see the danger in having one without the other. Firmness without compassion is just policing.
It is.
But what if the parent is struggling to maintain that composure? I mean, say they're already spiking with frustration because it's the 10th time they've had this exact same conversation.
The sources suggest that the compassion has to come first.
Okay.
Compassion means you genuinely acknowledge the child is struggling on the inside. They are failing because they lack the necessary character trait, that point B quality, to handle the situation internally.
So they might be disrespectful because they can't handle their own disappointment.
Or their insecurity. Exactly. But, and this is key, the firmness still requires action and accountability. The struggle is acknowledged, but it doesn't excuse the behavior.
That's the key distinction. We validate the feeling, but we require the correct action. The sources have a specific dialogue structure that models this perfectly.
It's a great simple model to rehearse. You might say something like, "Son, I can tell you're having a hard time doing the right thing here. Your emotions are getting the best of you."
That's the compassionate part, the validation.
Right. And then you immediately follow with the firm direction. You need to take a break and sit quietly until you can calm your voice.
So you acknowledge the internal struggle, but you require the outward behavior shift.
And that changes the entire emotional weather of the interaction. It prevents that escalation that defines the policeman model.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, let's pivot to the second core strategy, which involves the necessity of deliberate practice sessions. Why is practicing so critical here? Isn't just correcting the child's behavior enough?
Correction only addresses the event. Coaches practice because they need to change underlying patterns of responding.
Okay.
And to build new tendencies inside the heart. Character development isn't just intellectual, you know? It's behavioral. It's emotional. And that requires repetition outside of a crisis moment.
So we're setting up sessions designed to replace a poor automatic tendency with a new positive one.
That's the idea.
So what does that look like practically? It's more than just telling a kid, be more patient.
Right? Absolutely. That's a vague command, not a coaching tip. It means detailing the process. First, you remind the child of the established working definitions for the character quality they need, like responsibility or learning to handle disappointment.
And then you set up the practice sessions.
You deliberately set up practice sessions in a low-stakes environment to get that change.
Right.
We have a fantastic example of a 7-year-old boy who struggled with anger every single time the answer was no.
I think we all know that struggle. Handling disappointment is probably the most fundamental point B quality for any child trying to navigate life.
Absolutely. So the coach's plan involved teaching him about handling disappointment and being grateful for what he did have. But then came the crucial counterintuitive step.
Was it?
The coach instructed the boy to tell his parents to say no to him more often that week.
Wait. He's actively asking for rejection. That's brilliant.
Isn't it?
You're intentionally creating the friction so the child can rehearse the right response.
In a controlled environment. That's the power of the practice session. The boy was submitting himself to a plan that needed to be worked out in his life. He was proactively asking for opportunities to practice his new plan for handling disappointment.
That's fundamentally what a coach does. They identify a weakness, they build a specific drill, and they repeat it until the new response becomes natural.
Instinctive. Replacing the old destructive tendency.
That reframes every mundane interaction as a valuable training opportunity. Okay, let's zoom out now from the practice field to the wider world that young people are navigating.
Good idea.
The sources use a powerful metaphor to describe the challenges they face as they mature.
They call them landmines in life. Just as a battlefield contains hidden traps that cause damage, life is full of these landmines.
What are some examples?
The sources give powerful ones. Addiction, harmful relationships, crippling debt, negative self-defeating thinking patterns.
And as they step into independence, young people are often walking through that field relatively blind, especially in early adolescence.
They are. And this is why they benefit so greatly from having wise coaches to provide direction and insight to avoid those traps. It's about imparting wisdom, not just rules.
The sources quote some wisdom literature to back this up.
They do. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Parents, acting as coaches, should be very high on that list of trusted counselors.
I think this is also where we see that shift from parent as obstacle, the mountain to be overcome, as the source describes it, to parent as guide. If the child perceives you as the mountain blocking their path to freedom, they won't ask for guidance when they encounter a landmine.
Precisely. You have to remove the mountain barrier first. And to make this concept tangible, the source material describes a family activity where this metaphor is literally played out.
The avoiding landmines game.
That's the one.
Tell us about the setup.
It's simple. One person is blindfolded, and others are the guides. They have to navigate them around obstacles on the floor, the mines, like a chair, a pillow.
A toy.
Right, to reach a defined goal. The blindfolded person cannot see and the guide cannot touch them. They have to rely entirely on spoken communication.
I can just imagine the tension and frustration spiking in that activity. It probably feels less like guidance and more like a parental firing squad after 5 minutes of, no, left, stop, wait. No, I said left.
It's the entire point. It beautifully mirrors the difficulty of real-world guidance.
So what's the takeaway?
The application questions that follow the activity are key. What made being the guide easier? What made being the receiver of instruction easier?
And the big one.
And most importantly, what can parents and young people do to make the exchange of guidance easier in family life? It shifts the focus from the frustration of missing the goal to the vital process of listening and advising effectively.
That's powerful. So, we've defined the coach, we've covered firmness and compassion, and we've established the necessity of practice. Let's finish up by discussing the ultimate payoff, coaching toward genuine success.
Yes. The best coaches don't just point out weaknesses, they provide a clear, actionable vision for how the player can succeed.
The source material has a great baseball anecdote for this.
It does. It involves a parent who was coaching baseball with his son. They didn't just play games, they would come home after every match and debrief.
Analyzing players' specific weaknesses.
And then developing specific practice sessions or tips to help them overcome them. That is the strategy for change in action.
And the story about the young boy named Tommy truly encapsulates how a specific coaching tip beats a vague command every single time.
It's a perfect example. Tommy was an 11-year-old who was struggling with certain kinds of pitches, especially inside fastballs. His coach, Ed, didn't just tell him, try harder.
Right, that's useless.
Ed gave him a very specific, actionable mechanical tip. Pull the shoulder in a bit and swing hard.
And what happened?
Tommy took that specific coaching tip, applied it in his very next game when he got that dreaded inside pitch, and for the first time in his life, he hit an out-of-the-park home run.
Wow. That's a profound success that comes directly from specific, intentional coaching.
Not generalized frustration.
That is the vision we need to hold as parents. We look at our kids' struggles not as perpetual failures, but as weaknesses we can help them overcome with a specific practice tip.
Whether it's hitting a ball or managing their temper. And that successful, empowering attitude leads directly to the ultimate coaching model.
Which is?
When Jesus was preparing to leave the earth, he promised his disciples that the Holy Spirit would come as the advocate. The Greek word is paraclete.
Often translated as helper or counselor.
Or comforter. Our source suggests that if they were translating it today, the most functional word might just be coach.
Why coach? What is it about that word that captures the job description of the paraclete?
Because a paraclete is literally one who is called to stand alongside. It's a supportive, non-condemning, empowering presence.
Whose role is to guide and encourage us toward a specific goal.
Our point B, the parent who adopts this attitude is mirroring that divine model, standing alongside, not judging from above, but guiding to maturity. They are an empowering presence.
That reframes the entire parental role beautifully. And the sources wisely emphasize that this role requires deep parental humility.
Absolutely. Raising a child inevitably reveals the parents' own weaknesses, their own impatience, their need for grace, more clearly than they ever wanted to see.
So true.
Recognizing this need for growth allows the parent to assume the coaching role effectively, understanding that we are all on a path of growth.
And we are simply trying to equip the next generation with the tools we are still learning to master.
That humility is what prevents the policing attitude from taking root.
So what does this all mean for you, the learner? This deep dive gives us three critical, actionable takeaways for implementation this week. First, drop the umpire whistle and adopt the coach's attitude.
Communicate clearly that you are on the same team.
Second, replace reactive anger with that powerful combination of firmness and compassion. Address the struggle while requiring the action.
And third, utilize deliberate practice sessions. Create those small drills in low-stakes environments to build new positive patterns and tendencies inside the heart.
And here is a final provocative thought for you to consider this week.
We noted earlier that young people sometimes treat their parents as mountains that must be overcome in order to get what they want. If you dedicate yourself to this coaching role, with its emphasis on shared goals, specific teaching, and that pairing of firmness and compassion, how can that shift fundamentally change that adversarial dynamic?
And how can you help the relationship evolve from a traditional, often confrontational parent-child struggle
toward a more effective, wisdom-transferring adult-adult relationship?
That goal, that healthy adult-adult relationship, is the ultimate point B quality for both parties. Start your coaching shift today. Thank you for joining us for the deep dive.
We'll see you next time.